Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, October 22nd, 2020. The U.S. Secretary of State is optimistic about the Sudan-U.S. relations.
General Electric and Sudan Civilian-led Transitional Government signed an MOU on October 15th for significant new projects for power and healthcare. Be an enormous benefit to the people of that country. It's a welcome sign that the relationship between our two countries is advancing.
And one person is killed during protests across Sudan.
We requested for permission from the high-rank police officer in the area to shoot a video of protesters from the other side. We were granted the permission, but while I was shooting the video, around 15 police officers approached us and began to beat us using sticks, and my colleague Mozab was hit on his back with a gun.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The U.S. Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, says the Trump administration has embarked on the process of removing Sudan from the state sponsors of terrorism list. Pompeo says the Trump administration is trying to persuade Sudan to also normalize relations with Israel. For VOA News, Nabil Biaggi reports from Washington.
Addressing a press briefing at the U.S. State Department yesterday, Pompeo said the U.S. has already started doing business with Sudan, noting that Boston-based American company General Electric signed an agreement to provide Sudan with power.
General Electric and Sudan Civilian-led Transitional Government signed an MOU on October 15th for significant new projects for power and healthcare. That'll be an enormous benefit to the people of that country. It's a welcome sign that the relationship between our two countries is advancing. They're poised to take even greater strides once Sudan comes off the state sponsor terror list, as President Trump announced this week that we will do and we expect it to happen.
Sudan's central bank governor said on Tuesday the $335 million U.S. dollars Sudan agreed to pay victims of terror attacks in 1998 has already been transferred to the U.S. The attacks were carried out by Al-Qaeda, but Sudan was found guilty of providing support to the group. U.S. President Donald Trump said on Monday that once the money is deposited, he will lift Sudan from the U.S. terror list. Pompeo said the process of delisting Sudan has already started.
I don't know the precise timing, but we have begun the process to lift the designation of state sponsorship of terror. It's the right thing to do. There's been a lot of work done in this over the course of the first 3 years of the administration. We believe there's a firm legal basis for doing that. And we think that there will be enormous bipartisan consensus that that's the right thing to do.
Responding to a question whether delisting Sudan is related to Sudan normalizing relations with Israel, Pompeo said it is in Sudan's best interest to sign a peace agreement with Israel. He said while the U.S. is working hard to convince Sudan and other countries to normalize ties with Israel, Sudan is a sovereign state and only Sudan can make that decision.
We also are continuing to work to get every nation to recognize Israel, the rightful Jewish homeland, and to acknowledge their basic fundamental right to exist as a country. That certainly includes Sudan, and we are working diligently with them to make the case for why that's in the Sudanese government's best interest to make that sovereign decision. We hope that they'll do that. We hope that they'll do that quickly. We hope every country will do that quickly.
Israeli media reported yesterday that an Israeli delegation visited Khartoum to talk to Sudanese officials about normalizing relations between Khartoum and Tel Aviv ahead of an imminent deal. But no official statement or announcement has been made by either country about the alleged visit. A member of Sudan's ruling coalition known as the Forces for Freedom and Change told VOA that Sudan's transitional government does not have the mandate to normalize relations with Israel, a position, he said, Sudanese Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok conveyed to Secretary Pompeo when the U.S. diplomat visited Sudan in August. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biaggi in Washington.
Still on Sudan, one person was killed and hundreds of others were injured when police clashed with demonstrators in Khartoum on Wednesday. Some journalists accused the police of harassing and intimidating reporters who were covering the event. Hundreds of people held peaceful demonstrations in Khartoum to commemorate the 56th anniversary of the overthrow of Sudan's first military government, led by General Ibrahim Aboud. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
The Sudanese Doctors' Central Committee, a medical wing of the Sudanese Professional Association, issued a statement late last night saying 20-year-old Muhammad Abdul Majid was shot and killed by the Sudanese security forces in Eastern Nile while taking part in yesterday's peaceful protest. The statement says dozens of others were wounded. Five of the injured are listed in serious conditions, according to the doctor's statement. It says the seriously injured include a person with a disability who was kicked by a police officer in his stomach, which affected his kidney. Dozens of others experienced trouble in breathing after inhaling tear gas police fired at protesters, according to the Sudanese Doctors' Central Committee. Police also beat up and harassed journalists in at least two incidents during the protest. Ahmad Giweza, who works as a cameraman for Sky News Arabia, describes what happened in one of the incidents.
We requested for permission from the high-ranked police officer in the area to shoot a video of protesters from the other side. We were granted the permission, but while I was shooting the video, around 15 police officers approached us and began to beat us using sticks, and my colleague Mozab was hit on his back with a gun.
Giweza says security forces ordered journalists to stop covering the demonstration and handled them up into a Land Cruiser pickup truck and drove them to an area where they were interrogated for several hours before being released.
We were helpless and we could not resist. We were taken in a pickup to their officer in charge and we were forced to delete all our videos, including others which were taken from other places.
Giweza says he believes it will take Sudanese security forces quite some time before they are able to understand the real meaning of press freedom and freedom of his speech. He says he wasn't surprised to see how security forces handled demonstrators, given those kinds of tactics were part of the ousted President Omar al-Bashir's rule for decades.
It will take a time to change the understanding and perspective of the security forces in Sudan towards freedoms. There are quite a huge number of police officers who are not qualified.
Saadeddin Hassan, a reporter for Al-Hadas TV channel, was also reporting live from the scene of the protest. He says suspected Sudanese security forces, who were wearing civilian clothes while driving three Toyota pickups, ordered him to stop reporting. Sudan's Information Ministry issued a statement condemning the way security forces treated journalists covering the peaceful protest. Ministry officials say they will investigate the matter and ensure perpetrators are made to account for their deeds. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Some Juba-based economists say the decision by the governor of Central Equatorial State to ban foreign exchange in the black market in Juba will not improve the country's economy. A lecturer at the College of Economics and Social Studies at the University of Juba says the government should instead focus on injecting foreign currency into the country's economy. For VOA News, Onen Walter Solomon reports from Juba.
Central Equatorial State Governor Adil issued an order last Friday banning the operations of what he called illegal dealers in foreign currency who operate along roadsides and in shops without authorization from authorities. The order went into effect that same day. It provided no explanation. Kigen Fawala Lucky, a lecturer in the College of Economics and Social Studies at the University of Juba, says the governor's ban on black market foreign exchange trading could lead to more inflation.
This behavior encourages what we call bureaucratic corruption, because if you're restricting the black market from operating and the central bank is not injecting enough currency into the market, that means the money is going to be in hands of only few personnel who have access to such hard currencies, and that actually promotes corruption.
Dr. Abram Kwolnyuan, Dean of the College of Economics and Social Studies at the University of Juba, says if the ban is not handled properly, many people could start hoarding dollars, which could make matters worse. He says to stop the local currency from losing more value against the US dollar, the government needs to enact monetary policies aimed at strengthening the local currency, like ensuring that dollars and other foreign currency are available in commercial banks.
That means if an individual member of a general public needs the money, they should be able to go to the forex and get the same money that they are getting from the black market. They can be able to exchange it through the commercial bank or through the forex.
Rather than enforcing a ban on black market trading, Nguyen says the government should look at why that kind of trade thrives in South Sudan.
These few people who are selling the dollar along the road, there are people that they get these dollars from. And therefore, they need to deal with the root of the black market rather than the effect of the black market, which is the people selling along the road.
Fawala says to control inflation and the sharp decline in the value of the local currency, the government should, at least in the short run, inject more foreign currency into the market.
That we can look at is that the central bank itself has to sell foreign currency so that it will be able to meet demands of imports, such things like basic food, petroleum, because these are the regular things that the normal citizen is having problem with. Issues of controlling the exchange rate and just leaving it at that is not helping.
This is not the first time a South Sudan governor has tried to ban black market trading of foreign currency. In November 2013, former Central Equatorial State Governor Clement Wanikonga issued a provisional order banning the sale of dollars in Juba except in the Bank of South Sudan. And in January 2017, Agostino Jadala, the former governor of the now defunct Jubek State, issued a similar order when commercial banks nearly ran out of foreign currency. For VOA News, I am Onel Walter Solomon in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, democracy faces challenges in its birthplace. That story is next on the lineup.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
when you make a mistake, do you admit it or just move on and try not to do it again?
When I realize that I've done something wrong, but of course I have to make sure that I make a correction out of what I have done. Because sometimes there are things we do them and afterwards you learn from them as such.
It depends on the mistake, but most of the time I tend to realize my mistakes, and where it is necessary, I apologize. Why should I keep on moving when I've made a mistake? I've made a mistake, I have to apologize.
When I've done something wrong, I do admit. At the same time, I choose to move forward with my life.
Well, it is hard to admit mistakes, so yeah, usually the first option is to move on and try not to do it again. I think that's my first go-to option.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. A body coordinating and facilitating activities to fight HIV and AIDS, tuberculosis and malaria in South Sudan says it has received 121 million from the Global Fund to fight the three diseases from 2021 through 2023. But some health officials and lawmakers in South Sudan say the government and donors should provide more funds to meet the target goal of $220 million for the next 3 years. For VOA News, Ding Magot reports from Juba.
The South Sudan Global Fund Country Coordinating Mechanism, which facilitates activities to fight HIV and AIDS, tuberculosis and malaria in the country, says the grant of $121 million is good, but will not cover the work they need to do between 2021 and 2023. Jane Alphonse is interim chairperson of the South Sudan Global Fund Country Coordinating Mechanism.
It sounds a lot of money, you know, but when you compare to the needs in country, this money is not enough. Just take, for example, the National Strategic Plan. As I say, that's where we identify our needs and we prioritize our needs as a country. We need, you know, about $220 million for the next 3 years.
Dr. Kadiende Chang, Director General for Medical Services at the National Health Ministry and an advisor to the South Sudan Global Fund Mechanism, says the government should contribute an amount equivalent to 7.5% of the $121 million grant from the Global Fund. Dr. Chang says if the government fails to provide more money, the Global Fund will hold back $18 million of its $121 million grant. Members of the South Sudan Global Fund Mechanism have reached out to MPs in a bid to ensure that the government provides funds for the effort, says Dr. Chang.
We have engaged several times in the past, but all in vain. We talked to the Minister of Finance, and they are having a perception that health is adequately supported by the partners. And sad enough, they don't have the understanding that what the partners are giving is an additional funding. They don't replace the government and the country from its own responsibilities.
Catherine Peter La, who chairs a specialized committee of health, HIV and AIDS in South Sudan's national parliament, says after meeting with members of the South Sudan Global Fund Country Coordinating Mechanism, the panel agreed to help. La says the amount of money that the government allocates for health sector is far too little, not in last year's budget allocated less than 2%.
2% is far from the budget declaration, which pledged each and every state to allocate 15% to the health sector.
La is referring to the April 2001 African Union Summit in Abuja, Nigeria, where heads of states pledged to allocate at least 15% of their annual budgets to improve the health sector in their respective countries. In South Sudan's 2019-2020 fiscal year budget, the government allocated 525 million South Sudanese pounds out of a total of 80 billion South Sudanese pounds budget. Simon Lumori Philip, the chief whip of other political parties in South Sudan's parliament, says the government should contribute more money than donors to the country's health sector.
In truth, we were supposed to have the three quarters of the budget of whatever commission or any institution. What should come from the partners should only be something additional to what we contribute. But because of the situation, that's why the government may not be so much in place to do that.
The Global Fund provided a $97 million grant to South Sudan to fight HIV and AIDS, tuberculosis and malaria for the years 2018 through 2020. That donation is managed by the South Sudan Country Coordinating Mechanism, which is comprised of donors, NGO representatives, health ministry officials, civil society and private sector representatives. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
From Juba, we move to the international scene, where the world is watching as the U.S. prepares for a crucial elections for president and thousands of other representatives at all levels of government. South Africans are watching the drama with interest, with the help of few seasoned journalists who are attempting to explain the chances and developments in these historic elections. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
For 12 years, South African reporter Sherwin Brice Peace has had the job of explaining America,
and U.S. politics for his nation's state broadcaster from his base in New York. 2020, however, is posing a new storytelling challenge with a pandemic and an election that even for many American journalists is a tough task. But Bryce Peace says the difficulty is universal.
The truth deficit that we've encountered with this White House, you know, whether it's from the president's medical team post his COVID-19 diagnosis or just on any other day, you're not getting the facts necessarily from this White House. So we also always have to sort of put it through a prism. What has the president said and is it actually true? And this complicates the life of a journalist here.
His election coverage focuses broadly on the presidential race and on U.S.-Africa relations. He believes his audience prefers Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden in this race, largely because of Biden's connection to former President Barack Obama and for Biden's vice presidential pick, Kamala Harris. Also, he said President Donald Trump's disparaging comments about Africa have made him unpopular on the continent. In Johannesburg, retired U.S. diplomat turned writer Brooke Spector also tries to make sense of American politics for a South African audience in the Daily Maverick newspaper. This election, he says, has taken him to some strange places in his column.
About a month ago, I wrote a column which urged for international monitoring groups to check the American election to help keep it honest, straight, and free and fair.
His is not an isolated opinion. The African Union has even suggested an election observation mission to the U.S., a plan that does not appear to have materialized, though smaller teams from individual African states are reportedly planning their own observation missions. In that way, says analyst Lisa Lovaudrin, this poll could also influence how African nations behave in the future.
There's a paradigm shift, more than even a mind shift, in a sense that African countries and governments always feel on the back foot when it comes to everything, governance, even the responses to COVID-19. And what we've seen this last 6 months is that actually even the developed nations have been struggling. Their systems of governance are also under threat, as much as we have huge problems here.
Bryce Peace says this is an important time to be covering the U.S.
I mean, this is a strange moment for the United States, and I think we need to recognize that. I mean, the fact that you are questioning the electoral process of this shining city on a hill really does give a lot of people pause. I don't know how America comes out of this. The question is, what kind of leadership will you have post-November 3rd? I think that will be determinative of where we go here.
Wherever that is, Africa will be watching, and so will he. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
U.S. President Donald Trump and Democratic challenger Joe Biden are set to square off in their final debate tonight in what is one of the last high-profile events in an increasingly contentious campaign. Biden, who has stepped off the campaign trail to prepare for the debate, expects Trump to get intensely personal. Also on the campaign, former President Barack Obama made his first in-person campaign pitch Wednesday for his former vice president, urging voters at a drive-in car rally in Philadelphia not to sit out the elections and risk re-electing President Trump. International edition, Lori Lodin speaks to VOA White House correspondent Steve Harmon for more on the candidate's efforts in these last 2 weeks before the election.
Yes, Lori, on the campaign trail, it's been a real contrast between the incumbent and the challenger. President Trump has been holding this week at least one rally every day in the style we've seen in recent weeks, with big crowds, thousands and thousands of people who are packed close together, a lot of them not wearing masks. While on the Biden campaign trail, the former vice president himself has really not been out. He's preparing for the debate on Thursday night, leaving it up to his running mate, Senator Kamala Harris, to speak to much smaller crowds that are socially distanced and engaging in all sorts of recommended precautions amid the coronavirus pandemic. And then also former President Barack Obama on Wednesday in Philadelphia making his first appearances on behalf of the Biden campaign.
Right. Vice President Biden bringing out one of the most popular Democrats out there, and the former president seems a little bit more he seems very fired up about this election. He doesn't seem to be holding back and quite as reserved as he used to be.
Yes, traditionally, former presidents have pretty much stayed off the campaign trail for their successors or candidates from their own party. And when they have spoken, they've been quite restrained. Obama has broken with that tradition and had a full-throated criticism of the behavior and record of Donald Trump during the past 3.5 years or so. But of course, Donald Trump has not been a traditional president, and that's probably what has motivated Barack Obama, among other things, to engage in such direct criticism of his successor.
And what do we know about this last and final debate between President Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden? It's going to be a little bit different. It's the second, not the third, as planned.
Yes, we were supposed to have three. Now it's only two because the president, amid his coronavirus infection, when the debates commission wanted to make that second debate virtual, the president backed out of that. So this will be the second one in person in Nashville, Tennessee. It'll be a little bit different after what we saw with the first debate, where the president quite frequently interrupted and talked over Joe Biden. In this debate, the candidates are being told that they will be able to make their 2-minute statements, and presumably if the other candidate talks over their competitor, a mute button will be pressed, or presumably if either candidate rambles on past their allotted time, then that button could also be pressed to silence them. So we'll see whether that button is pressed and how the candidates react to it, because even if the mute button is pressed, the people watching on television may not be able to hear what the candidate is saying, but the people who are in the audience will be able to hear it, including a bunch of reporters.
And it sounds like they'll be debating 6 different topics, including, of course, the COVID-19 pandemic, race in America, climate change.
One thing that's notable is we're not really going to have a discussion about foreign policy, which a lot of our listeners around the world would very much like to hear about from Donald Trump and Joe Biden.
VOA always delivers your favorite programs, news, music, entertainment, and sports shows. Starting Monday, October 5th, our flagship news show, South Sudan in Focus, will be moving to 1630 UTC, followed by your favorite sports show, The Sunny Side of Sports, at 1700 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Before we end this show, I have a special announcement for you. This program can now be heard in South Sudan at 7:30 local time on VOA affiliate stations. Please inform your friends and relatives. That's all we prepared for you this Thursday. It is a little bit cloudy here in Washington, and we have to leave you with the song Bambe Makaimot by Simon Kero.
Bambe makaimo moya garwa saki Bambe makaimo moya garwa saki Zaman motor zede mad turu dumara Zaman matara zede mad turu dumara Bambe makaimo moya hilo wasaki Bambe makaimo moya hilo wasaki Washini dunga mayan me pare Washini dunga mayan me pare Aparo eme ajirojini kusende onakwario Aspire karanga juba na wawo wada Bambe makaimo moya garwa saki
We've been listening to Simon Kero with the song Bambe Makaimot. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, phones and vehicles. Remember to wash your hands with soap. practice social distancing and wear a mask if you must leave your home. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Kandara kan saginia kamuni fungaru fere.